3, 2, 1, we're live!
Welcome, I'm Megan.
And I'm Danielle.
And this is Crime and Roses.
And we are a true crime and bachelor franchise recap podcast.
Megan.
Hi, Danielle!
We're here.
We are. And it's a beautiful, beautiful day in Georgia, and Georgia is blue.
Who they want? Flip!
And the country!
Flip. Flip.
The country flip. Is blue.
Flip. Flip. Who they want? Flip.
Okay. I'm rooting for everybody Pennsylvania and everybody Georgia.
And everybody black.
Did you hear my president?
Stacks. He was like, you African Americans have had my back. You know you damn right, B.
You damn right. One of the things I want to say about this podcast, and Megan and I have had conversations about it, and she was really clear with me and told me what this was going to be, and I didn't disagree, that we were going to talk about things that are important to us, that we believed in, that were how we felt. That's what you're literally listening to us talk about, how we feel about The Bachelor and how we feel about true crime. So
yeah,
I personally think you can vote for whoever you want to vote for. You can be a Republican. I don't have a problem with you being a Republican. I have a problem if you decide that you want to vote for Trump and all that he stands for. So for me, us talking, people are, you know, I mean, people are leaving our social media platforms and people are saying, well, I'm going to leave and I don't want to hear all this political stuff. Then don't let the Lord hit you.
Have a nice day.
Bye. See you later. Because yeah, That's what's important to us. And no, that doesn't mean like you can't come in and be like, well, I'm a Republican, so don't listen to the podcast. You can listen to whatever you want to. That doesn't mean we're going to stop talking about what's important to us. And this was important to us. And that's why we posted it. And that's why we're talking about it. And we are not the same people. Megan and I are not 100%. We don't agree on everything. You don't have to agree with us.
We bicker quite a bit.
We definitely do. We try to cut some of that out, but sometimes we just leave it in because
it is what it is.
But at the same time, like, we want this to feel like a safe space for people who are not safe in this world, which we are trying to do our best to be as inclusive as possible. But we also have our own views, and politics is going to be a part of that. So if you don't want to listen, don't listen. But, you know, I just want you to know that, like, we care about how you feel and that this podcast should be for everybody. It's very inclusive. We're not saying if you don't believe what we believe in or if you don't agree with us, don't listen. What we're saying is, like, if you don't agree, you can still listen and still reach out to us and have conversation. But I'm not going to argue with you. I can argue with you all damn day about if we like Dale or Claire or, you know, how good black men.
Or if you thought some shirt was cute or not.
Yeah.
Like,
we can argue about Claire and Dale's their outfit choices on The Bachelor. We can.
Any day of the week.
We can talk about Bachelor in Paradise. We can argue about theories about who killed JonBenet, even though we all know, don't sue us. I am not going to argue with you.
You said no name.
Oh, we said no name. I'm not going to argue with you. Mm-mm. Megan, I'm not going to argue with Megan. I'm not going to argue with my family. I ain't going to argue with listeners about voting for Trump.
Nah.
Mm-mm. I'm not going to argue with you about basic human rights and civil liberties.
Yeah, we can argue about pizza topping. All kinds of shit. Does a pineapple belong on a pizza?
It does not.
Let's discuss.
I like olives.
It's tasty.
Maybe you don't.
I like olives too.
I like a good.
I'm okay with a pineapple on a pizza.
That's disrespectful. Take that shit off. I like a good veggie pizza.
Delicious. I can support that.
Like a good,
I like most pizzas.
I like most pizzas. Fuck an anchovy, fuck a pineapple.
That's part of my problem. Oh no, fuck. No, get the anchovy all the way away from me.
But we're not going to have this conversation about human rights.
Because human rights aren't pizza toppings.
Cheers to democracy working and the reason why our forefathers came to this country and said that we could vote, why black people fought to vote, why women fought to vote. We did it. We are literally our ancestors' wildest dreams.
Yep. And it's a beautiful, beautiful sight.
Now let's talk about some horrible true crime.
Yay!
You said I'm going to go first, right?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so we talked about that. We're going to do our true crime cases at the end. We'll talk a little bit about what's coming next on the pod. And, of course, join us on Patreon. We've got, really cool stuff coming up. That's, the normal plug. We're excited.
Did you Did you hear? Did you see my beautiful vice president?
I was
in her suffragette white.
I was in tears, Megan.
I sobbed. I sobbed when she came on stage.
Literally, this election, the week of anxiety that I've had, like, I just kind of stopped doing anything that wasn't, like, necessary. And yeah, just, like, waking up on Saturday morning, I was like, okay, I just sat it on CNN. And literally, to listen to her talk at the end of the last 4 years, in 2020, the week that we've had, I was just like, this is, like, it's just, it's poised. It's beautiful. It's, like, cinematic. It is, like, everything you would want in a president and a vice president. They are calm, cool, and collected. They are talking about unity. They have grace. They have humility. They are humble. They are thankful. They are everything that this country needs right now.
Do you smell that?
What is it? What is it?
Human rights and decency, bitch.
It feels so nice.
Mm. One of us was a lot more eloquent in her thoughts.
I was just going off the cuff. So, thank you.
It was really eloquent.
The fact that she just acknowledged, and they said that the commentators were saying, like, this was a very big speech for a vice president, which usually doesn't happen. But her being our VP means so much to women. It means so much to minorities. It means so much to people who believe in human rights and value others and that don't have to actually be similarly situated in someone's situation to then, like, empathize with them and want them to have justice and freedom that matches their own. And for everybody who was like, my privilege, you know, I have privilege and what am I going to do with it? This is what you did.
I'm going to cry.
Don't cry.
I have been like, oh, and then I drove through Midtown Atlanta yesterday after it was announced. It was so beautiful. I actually had to drive downtown to go take something to David. And at the Capitol, there were a bunch of Trump fans like waving mm-hmm. signs and waving all sorts of things. I may have rolled down my window and cussed them out.
And
told them to read
the room. Drive by every sign and be like, loser, loser, you lost, you're a loser, you're a loser.
Normally, I'm flipping them off, not visibly, because Trumpers carry guns, but still, I'm flipping them off everywhere I go. But I got to flip off a couple in person the other day, that was nice. But then, like, the contrast of, like, going near the Trump supporters to Midtown Atlanta, and literally, like, everybody's just, like, crying and laughing and happy, and like you can feel the love in the space, like, and the cars are honking, and car honking has never sounded so beautiful.
I know, right?
It was just fantastic.
And then
I got drunk,
but I literally was telling someone, I feel as though this heavy weight on my chest that has been there for so long, it just feels like a little lifted. It felt like I felt represented. I felt heard. I felt listened to. I felt like our cries and our wailing in the streets and saying, this isn't right. Oh my gosh, like social injustice and COVID and why don't we have a mask mandate and all these things. I was like, oh my gosh, somebody is like listening to me. And every time they talked, even, you know, every night listening, I was like, it just gave me a little bit more hope. And just seeing how close the votes are in Georgia and that this 30-year stretch of a red state could turn blue and people made different choices, that young people were really energized to vote, that people picked humanity over their own political party at some point. All of those things just meant to me that, like, people got it and we heard it and we listened and that, like, every vote really does matter. And people were, like, energized and immobilized and that they had a strategy for how they were going to, like, take down this dictator. And then we did it.
And, like, the work is not over. It's not over until we're actually equal. It's not over until people are actually loved in the way that everyone should be mm-hmm. loved. But this is definitely a time for celebration.
Absolutely.
And I'm celebrating today, and I'm celebrating tomorrow. Well, yesterday and today. And tomorrow we got to work on the Georgia Senate runoff. Yes. But right now is a time for celebration.
Yes. And Georgia, again, is going to be at the forefront because, from my understanding, is like if this Senate runoff goes well, then we'll have the majority. And then Mitch McConnell won't be the Senate leader, what I read. So
as it stands right now, because there are 100 seats in the Senate, there's currently 50 seats that have gone to Republicans in this election. So technically right now they still have the majority, but because the other 48 seats are all Democrats or independents, and the independents caucus with the Democrats and they generally vote with the Democrats, there's 48 other seats. The other two open seats are both here in Georgia. It is unprecedented to have two open Senate seats at one time. And they both very seriously could go to Democrats. We would be at a 50-50 split straight down the middle. And you know who that tiebreaker vote is? Madam Vice President.
I love it.
And we can actually get some shit done.
There's real work that needs to be done in Georgia and needs to continue. And we have to.
And across the country.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. But like
but we're a little biased.
Well, this runoff is a big part. And so Georgia will be on the spotlight again. And we have to show up. And basically, like we said, keep that same energy. We got to keep that same energy to make sure that, which local elected officials are so important. And I think that in COVID, people really realize that.
Hi, I'm Jenny, the host of It's Murder Up North. If you're curious about the murderous north of England, this podcast is definitely for you. I've lived in various parts of the north of England. I went to college in the shadow of Saddleworth Moor, where Myra Hindley and Ian Brady buried those 5 innocent children. I've worked in the city of Leeds, where the Yorkshire Ripper targeted his victims in the 1970s. Knowing how geographically close I have been to these crimes made me curious, and that curiosity became this podcast. However, my main hope is to help you see the person, not the victim.
I'm going to go first. I chose my story because this week we saw Chris and Brie from Listen to Your Heart.
I love Chris and Brie.
I do too. And they have a very special heart in our place.
Yeah, they do.
I'm not correcting it either. We actually started our podcast journey with Listen to Your Heart.
And it was an interesting ride.
Very interesting. And we interviewed Chris and Brie, which we talked about before. We also interviewed District 78, the music producers for the show, and Natasha from the show. So we'll...
My queen.
Yes. It says Queen Natasha. How dare I disrespect? I'm sorry.
Use her correct title. Thank you very much.
We interviewed Queen Natasha, who I also want to give like a little plug to. Natasha had posted something about check your voter registration, and I was up at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, fuck it, I'm just going to go check. And I forgot the last time I voted, my name was different. So I was no longer registered. This is a while ago. I was no longer registered to vote and had to like fix the shit. And so because Natasha used her platform to talk about voting, I was able to like vote.
That's beautiful.
So I wrote her and I said, oh my God, just wanted to let you know, thank you so much. And she was like, that made my year. You guys are the best. I love y'all. And we were like, we love you too, girl.
And hey, I know election season is done, not necessarily in Georgia, but check your voter registration status.
I didn't even know. I was like, oh fuck, I'll just go see. And I was like, wait, what? It's like, no, totally forgot I had changed my name. So whoopsies. That was my fault. But luckily someone posted about it and used their platform for good. And that like was good for me.
Well, good. I'm glad that reminded you.
So we'll put all the links in the show notes for those different interviews. So Chris of Chris and Brie is one of our favorite Bachelor Nation people. He's the first real diversity that I actually saw on the show.
He love him. Mm.
As a winner, quote unquote, right?
Yeah.
Then we went to Greatest of All Time and like diversity had a steep decline.
Like it was like, what is diversity?
What? Diversity?
No one knows.
What is that? I don't know. Is that a new word?
What? Where did all the people of color go?
Hello?
What is melanin?
Hello? Is there any black people in the room? No. Greatest of All Time was like,
Please put your hand up.
Put your hand up if you're any kind of racial minority. Okay, nothing. Nothing.
If you're anything not white. No? No one.
So, let me tell you about Chris. So, my favorite song of his is called Call Me. It's so good. I'm put a link in the show notes for it. And Chris and Bree, their favorite song, well, I'm just going to say it's their favorite song. My favorite song of theirs is Beyond by Leon Bridges, which the name will connect with the story today. And I also have that YouTube clip of their actual time on Listen to Your Heart and them singing the song. It's so good.
I just love them together. I think they're just really sweet.
They're really sweet.
I'm really happy for them.
And they're genuine. They were here for the right reasons. Yeah. All of the other cliche bachelor stuff.
Yeah.
And Bria is like, stunning.
Oh my God. Her cheekbones literally could cut glass.
You said it, sis. Ugh. So let me tell you about Chris from Listen to Your Heart and tell you about his bio. So he was 30 years old. He's living in LA still. He was a wedding singer. And so he grew up in Tampa, Florida to Caribbean parents. And he was always encouraged to find love and follow his dreams. This is not my bio. This is what Bachelor said. Just so you know, they're like, Danielle, don't.
Thank you for the clarity.
Don't ever say clarity again.
Not on my podcast.
No Claire puns, please. So after losing his father, Chris had been motivated to pursue his passion of having a music career at no matter what the cost. And he was looking for a woman that he could sing and grow old with. And it doesn't hurt if she can hold a tune as well. After years of being a singer at weddings, he's ready to find his love story. His fun facts at the time was that he worked for UNICEF and participated in mission trips around the world. He also rode around and for 3 months in an RV that was made into a recording studio and made music with his friends, which is like fucking dope. Also, Chris's favorite wedding songs are Stand By Me by Benny King and Latch by Disclosure, which was my wedding song, which I thought was like original. Aww. And me being like, look at me. And then it's like, bitch, everybody has that.
Yeah.
He describes himself as Jahaitian American. His mother is Haitian and his father is Jamaican. So I'm going to mix a little music, a little politics due to the current climate, a little bit of Jamaica, a little bit of name association. Here we go.
Ooh,
so
okay.
This crime occurred in Kingston, Jamaica, which is the capital of the largest city in Jamaica, located on the southeast.
Capital of the largest city?
What? Kingston is the capital. Sorry. Kingston is the capital and largest city. I don't have a drink yet. I'm not ready. Located on the southeastern coast of the island. In 1788, one in every four people living in Kingston was white. And there was a large population of free people of color there as well, meaning that two out of five people living in Kingston were free. And the remaining three-fifths were slaves, black slaves. So the majority of the population in Kingston is of African descent. There is a large minority ethnic group to include East Indians and Chinese who came to the country as indentured servants in the late 19th century. So today, actually, multiracial Jamaicans continue to form the second largest racial group. And there's also a small Jewish population in the city.
Interesting.
So it's about 79% black, 12% multiracial, 5% Asian, 3% white. In 1848, Jamaica's government expanded to Kingston and basically constructed new homes in the west, north, and east of the city. And the housing became really segregated in terms of race and class. By the 1860s, the majority of white elites lived on the outskirts of the city, and the population really grew. And so settlements became really dense and occupied these marshes in the southwest. So they ended up filling them to have development of new housing. So in 1935, the population continued to grow and poverty resulted in there were basically slums in the city in the east and the west. So those areas ended up being demolished by the government, and then residents were rehoused in Denham Town. The development had accommodated about 3,000 people, but it left more than one-sixth basically homeless. So overcrowding continued in the city and cramped living conditions resulted in like some major health issues. And essentially Kingston became divided with the haves and the have-nots. It wasn't until the 1960s that Kingston had a major change in the city. The international attention of reggae music at the time coincided with the expansion and development of 95 acres of the city and then the waterfront area. And those developments then led to shops and offices and a new financial center within the city.
Okay.
So, some notable people. I'm just going to name these because I feel like you're not going to know most of them.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to put them in categories. The Marleys.
Okay. Oh, hey, I've heard of them.
Bob Marley, Damian Marley, Ziggy Marley are all musicians. They're like the most notable people ever.
If you don't know who Bob Marley is, like...
Would anybody not know who Bob Marley is?
Maybe like a baby still in a uterus.
I bet my son doesn't. So, those are the Marleys. Then you have you ever heard of these people? Beanie Man, Elephant Man.
Elephant Man.
Okay. Sean Paul.
Yeah.
Shabba Ranks.
Temperature. No.
Shaggy.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
It wasn't me.
And Angel, for the record. I prefer Angel, but I can fucks with it. It wasn't me, too.
Yes. So. Essentially, all of these people that I just listed are dance hall or reggae artists, which were a part of that, like, when I told you in the 60s, it got really big. These are some of the big names that brought over, like, dance hall. Like, Sean Paul is, like, the dance hall, king of the dance hall, you know, is what they say. And then also Patrick Ewing, who is an NBA basketball player for the New York Knicks, like, very, very famous, one of the best basketball players ever. He is from Kingston, Jamaica.
I think I even knew that name.
It rang a bell. I'm proud of you.
It did. I didn't know where it came from, but it was then there somewhere.
I'm proud of you. That's so
better than I normally do with basketball, so.
Or any sport. Love you. Mean it.
Yeah.
So, okay, some other things to note about Kingston that I thought were interesting. Kingston is actually Jamaica's third capital. Spanish Town was the first. Then Port Royal, which was established by the British in 1655, but it was devastated by an earthquake. And then which Kingston at the time was exclusively agricultural, so it became a refuge area for the survivors of the earthquake. And then they were like, fuck it, we're not leaving. It's our capital. So Jamaica is the largest English-speaking island in the Caribbean. And its capital is the largest English-speaking Caribbean city south of the United States. There are roughly 50,000 Jamaicans residing in South Florida, where Chris grew up in Tampa. So it's like a very... Huh. Also, Kingston is the birthplace of Jamaica's iconic fast food, the Jamaican beef patty. Have you ever had...
I love a beef patty. Oh my God.
They're so fucking delicious.
Listeners, friends, if you have not had a Jamaican beef patty, first of all, fix your life. Second of all, definitely get it from a Jamaican restaurant, but if there's no Jamaican restaurant near you, you can also find frozen ones at Walmart that are actually pretty damn good. So
perfect timing. I love a Jamaican beef patty. They are delicious. Again, like Megan said, fix your life. I went to New York to visit my aunt, and she was like, there's carts. So I just like grabbed one off of a cart. I ate that shit every day I was there. So Tasty, which is the creators of the original patty, began baking the beef turnovers, basically, commercially in Crossroads, Kingston, back in the 60s. And they have Tasties. So, if Megan said, like, if you Google Tasties and they have one nearby, go there to get them. But if you don't, definitely try them. They're so fucking delicious. It's like seasoned beef inside of, like, a flaky puff pastry.
It's just... so good.
Delicious.
So good. They also come in chicken, and the chicken is also very good.
Oh, I don't think I've had
chicken. I prefer
beef.
I prefer the beef ones myself, but chicken will do in a pinch.
If I have to. All right, so I'm going to tell you about Rose Agatha Leon. She was born Rose Agatha Huey on October 20th of 1913. I also saw other years of her life. So I'm going to say 1913 because that's what Wikipedia told me. But I saw several other dates ranging higher and lower.
So somewhere in the early 1900s.
There you go.
Cool.
She is the daughter of Dr. R.J. Huey and Mrs. Huey. She was affectionately named later in life as an adult, Madam Leon. She was brought up in Kingston, where she went to Central Branch School and then Woolmers Girls School. Woolmers is the first free school that was founded in 1729, and there's also a theater that was on Harbor Street and then moved in 1774 to North Parade. Both of those are still in existence to this day. So, like, this school
is... Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That's a long time. Wow.
Absolutely. So, she first made her name as a beautician and was in business at a time where Jamaica had very few women involved in commerce. She returned to Jamaica from studying at the Abyssinian School of Cosmetic Chemistry in the U.S. Hmm. So she co-founded the Lyons School of Beauty and Culture and Lyons Beauty Products in 1939 with her husband, Arthur Lyon. And she basically pioneered locally made beauty products so that women didn't have to buy them from abroad. They were locally sourced.
Okay,
so. Cool. Then,
shop local.
Basically. So then she ends up having like a political career. And it began in the 1940s when the Jamaican Labor Party, which is also JLP, and the People's National Party, PNP, were basically in their infancy, but they would grow to dominate Jamaican politics.
Okay.
So Jamaica's first election under universal adult suffrage was held in 1944, which universal adult suffrage gives the right to vote to all adult citizens, regardless of wealth, income, gender, social status, race, ethnicity, and any other restrictions.
I really wish that the right to vote wasn't called suffrage, personally, because suffrage sounds sad.
I absolutely fucking agree.
And voting is awesome.
It absolutely is. I don't know why they call it that. I'm sure there's a reason, but I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm sure there is too. I just don't like it.
So in 1948... Rose became the first woman to chair the national political party, the Jamaican Labor Party, holding the position for 12 years during a period of growth and growing self-government. In 1949, she was elected as a member of the House of Representatives, and in 1953, she was appointed to the Minister of Health and Social Welfare. And basically, people said that she was a minister who prided herself on getting the job done. One story said that she removed a chief from a hospital in the North Island and basically made sure that the replacement, who lived on the other side of the country, drove through the night to begin work the next day at like 8 a.m. Oh. It's like, oh, hi, welcome to the job. Bring your ass here and get here by the morning.
By the way, be on time.
So that was the kind of direct approach that earned her the respect of people across political divide. So she was also outspoken, which got her into a little bit of a trouble.
Been there. Mm-hmm.
Who hasn't? In 1955, in her election campaign, she was defending her seat for the first time and went to go speak to a group in support of a fellow Jamaican Labor Party candidate. She made a bunch of derogatory remarks about the person who was in the PNP group. And basically led that person, the opponent, to file an election petition. And then she and the other candidate in her party won. So the court had to enforce the election rules that the PNP opponent had basically said, like, he snitched and was like, they ain't do this right. And they were really considered very strict. So they found in his favor, and Rose's victory was overturned, as well as her... Yeah, as well as the other person who was in her party, both of their victories were overturned.
Wow.
I don't know what disparaging marks were said. It didn't say, but seems really serious. So she also possessed a sense of dramatic, is what one article said, once going so far to pull up her skirt to reveal her silk knickers to delight constituents, saying she wore
ma'am.
She said she wore only the best and wanted the best for them too.
Okay, ma'am.
So then she was back in the news and was seen as a political maverick in the 60s. She ended up disagreeing with her party about the way they were handling some things and switched sides.
Oh.
Joining the People's National Party and then returning to the limelight in the 1960s as a counselor. In 1971 to 72, she was deputy mayor of Kingston. She went on to become a minister of local government. She lost her seat in 1976, and then the PNP government ended up retaining her as an advisor. Madame Rose was also a founding member of the Jamaican Manufacturers Association, serving as a president in 1967, and then became the longest serving board member and was made a life member in 1993. She was also a founding member of the Jamaican Federation of Women. So
cool.
Dope ass chick.
Yeah.
Politically. I mean, she like was the first to do any of this stuff a while ago when like that things were not happening that way.
Yeah.
So on August 16th of 1999, Rose was between the ages of 85 to 90. That's like
okay.
The range. This is like 5-year range, which when my grandmother died, everyone was shocked to find out that she was older than what she had been lying to us for so long about her age. That like
I love
her
that.
Own children didn't even know. I thought my grandmother was 55 forever. She was 10 years older than that. She was 65. And I was like, her children were like, I thought she was 63. And I thought she was. So anyways, there's a 5-year grace period when you get older.
At least. Yeah.
Grandma Nancy made it 10. I'm going to shoot for a 15 to 20.
I would love that. Yeah.
Like somebody, when I'm 80, I would like people to think I'm 60.
I would love that.
Okay. I'm going to make it happen. You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
So Rose was actually found lying on the floor near her bed in her Mount Atlas home on Fraser's Avenue in Coopers Hill. Both of her hands and feet were bound with wire. Her mouth was stuffed with a piece of cloth, and she had been strangled to death.
For an 80 to 90-year-old woman?
Yes.
You know, why? Disrespect. Why did you do that?
Oh, let me tell you why. So the killers entered Rose's 6-bedroom home by lowering themselves with a rope through a skylight.
Like Mission Impossible style.
That's when I read this, I was like, is this a fucking movie? So they dropped into the hallway near her bedroom and they pried open, it says a grill, but a fence to gain entry. Her 66-year-old chauffeur and caretaker told the police that he did hear a strange noise outside the home at 1 a.m. and again at 3, which led police to conclude that those were the times that something had happened. And he said, I heard dogs barking and the car alarm went off. I looked outside and I saw 2 men. I tried to call the police, but the intruders had cut the phone line. He said, if I had a cellular phone, the police may have caught them. Which is this is 1999.
So if he had had a cell phone, it would have been like as large as the house.
Yes. So the chauffeur said his movements were restricted because of the fence that was separating his living quarters with hers, and that she was the one who normally kept the key. So he said at about 7 a.m., he managed to gain attention of the neighbors who alerted police, which like... I'm not saying he had anything to do with it, but You heard something at 1 o'clock, you heard something at 3 o'clock, and then at 7 a.m. you finally like, why wouldn't you be running door to door to be like, somebody help? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So they arrived at the scene about a half an hour later, which seems like a long time. The housekeeper, who was off on the weekend, said that Rose would lock up the house and didn't allow visitors to come in. A television set was missing from the house, along with the green pickup van, which the murderers used to escape from the house. So a woman who identified herself as Rose's secretary said that she had collected $14,000 on Friday and given it to her employer. So
that's a nice... sum of cash.
To me, it sounds like inside job. If she just collected $14,000 on Friday and then the next day she's like robbed.
Mm-hmm.
So the police said they found no evidence of the money while conducting the investigation inside the bedroom. So the money was gone. They had also cleaned out 7 bedrooms of the home and then again stole the green Toyota. So this is a really fucked up part.
Oh God. Be prepared. Okay.
So... all right. An autopsy later showed that she suffocated on her own dentures.
Oh.
So the dentures were forced down her throat by the gag that they put in her mouth.
Oh.
Which I took to say that I don't think that they meant to kill her. I think they just meant to rob her, and then she, like, accidentally died.
Yeah.
It was kind of fucked up. So here's a quote. This is kind of the aftermath of everything. It says, the callousness of the crime against such a prominent figure, adding to the angst in the Caribbean's capital that had been struggling for years with one of the highest murder rates in the world. So 567 people had been killed in 1999 in Jamaica, and more than 85%. Wow. I thought that was a ton of people.
Yeah.
So more than 85% of them were in metropolitan Kingston. Which was compared...
wow.
Yeah. It's a lot.
That's a lot of people.
But then, so in the article, they were like, but in 1990, the same time last year, 98, it was 600 people. And then it was 640 in 97.
Okay, cool. So the numbers are going down, yes. But that's still a fuck ton of people.
High as fuck, but going down. So
making progress, but also...
But also, holy fuck.
Not great. Yeah, not great.
So the widow of a former prime minister, Beverly Anderson Manley, she's a host of this show called The Breakfast Club. Not the one here in the United States with, like, Charlemagne the God. Totally different. Uh-huh.
Okay, cool.
So she basically gave her voice and said what everybody was thinking. She said, I totally apologize to the Jamaican people. Uh-huh. Quote, saying, I thought about how we got to a stage where you could not only, you could have not only a prominent woman in society, but also an elderly woman, an icon who served the country, be killed by some young guys. How did we get to such a stage of anarchy? I knew the nature of our politics. I was married to a party leader. I couldn't say that I didn't know. So a coalition of religious leaders responded and had a national ball out, which is B-A-W-L, which is like a cry out.
Oh, not like a foo, foo, foo.
What's
that was me
what is that?
Doing
what is free that throw shots, what is that?
That was free throw shots.
Oh, I
that was balling.
Okay, so I thought about like balling.
We
like
fly
money,
high.
Like,
no
like
love.
Cash.
Balling.
Oh, we no. fly high. Like that, you know, balling. I was thinking about like cash.
That was my high school graduation walkout song. Like after the ceremony, we walked out to balling.
Interesting. So anyways, they had a ball out. Not a ball, not a shoot, it's a B-A-W-L. That's what it is.
Okay.
So,
a cry sesh,
exactly. Right after Rose was murdered, to denounce violence and corruption of the past. And there is serious risk of crime in Kingston even today. Violent crime, including sexual assault, is a serious problem throughout Jamaica, particularly in Kingston and Montego Bay. The police's force is understaffed and has limited resources, and gated resorts are not immune to violence. Like, just think about that. In 2017, Jamaica's homicide rate was 56 per 100,000. In 2018, the homicide rate dropped to 47 per 100,000, but remains three times higher than the average for Latin America and the Caribbean.
Wow.
Have you ever been to Jamaica?
No.
I mean,
it's actually quite high on my bucket list.
I think people should still go, but just, like, know that...
Be aware.
Yeah.
I mean, be aware of your surroundings anywhere you go.
And I think sometimes when you go and travel to other countries and you stay on the resort, you know, and people just think, like, oh, this is how it is. It's not. Like, the tourism that you bring adds to the economics of the city, but this still is a city of two tails. It's still the haves and have-nots.
I will say that I did a solo vacation, I think in 2016 or 2017 to Cancun, and I could feel that.
Yeah.
Like, I was perfectly fine the entire time. I never felt anything less than safe, and I stayed on the resort the whole time, but just be aware of your surroundings.
Yeah.
Anywhere you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Forbes magazine listed Jamaica as the third most dangerous place for women travelers in 2017. Oh. I was like, I should not say that because you're just like talking, but just keep it in mind. In 2018, Business Insiders ranked Jamaica 10th among the 20 of the most dangerous places in the world. And the International Monetary Fund, which is IMF, cited crime as the number one thing that was impeding economic growth throughout the country.
Yeah.
So Jamaica's, okay, so this was a really interesting thing that happened, which I was like, I don't know why they stopped doing that. But Jamaica's government concluded that corruption and transnational crime presented a grave threat to national security. And in 2018, due to rampant violence and murders, the government of Jamaica declared a state of emergency and created zones of special operations for several parishes, which included Kingston's metropolitan area and the parish of St. James, which is Montego Bay. And so basically they told visitors to avoid some of the areas due to violence. And then the state of emergency allowed for security forces to be, words are very difficult. The state of emergency allowed for security forces to be deployed to address organized crime and gang violence, as well as drugs and gun trafficking and lottery scams.
Oh, yeah. A lottery scam. I don't even know. Interesting.
Very interesting. So the Emergency Powers Act allowed security forces to detain and deport suspicious people and to enter homes and seize property without a warrant, and to also declare curfews. So the three states of emergencies and the two zones of special operations lowered the murder rate by 22%.
Wow.
Right. And which was largely at a very steep decline in St. James, Montego Bay. So, however, the state of emergency lapsed at the end of January of 2019 after Jamaica's parliament did not approve its extension. So
part of that, I heard you say, was they can do searches, they can do warrantless searches.
Yeah, they can do warrantless searches, they can deport people, and they also could, like, arrest them.
Oh.
Very problematic.
That makes me nervous. Yeah, it makes me very nervous.
But then also you have like 22% in murders that go down.
True.
So back to Rose. So in a tribute given by Ambassador Dudley Thompson in 2002, he observed, quote, "Always uppermost in her mind and actions were the underclass and the underprivileged in our society. She had a sincere and genuine compassion for them, and they in turn replied with an effusion of popular love. She sent a clear signal that women of Jamaica were ready and that a woman's place was not only in the home, but in the forefront of national development." And one article said, "Madame Rose Leon was dedicated wife, mother, and grandmother, and mentored hundreds of young students who became successful business owners in Jamaica's burgeoning beauty industry. Rose had a daughter named Gloria, and Gloria Millwood succeeded her as the head of the manufacturing and training businesses, and her granddaughter, Dr. Giselle Leon Rich, is a well-known author on nutrition and wellness and actually lives in Florida. Madame Rose Leon lived her motto, quote, hard work as a way to achievement, envy no one." So right up.
I like that.
I do too. Right up until her death, she actually taught at the school every day, and they said that she was artfully made up and perfectly coiffed.
Oh, so I love that.
She like, even later in life, she just was one of those little ladies that was like, just dressed to the nines, like every
just
day.
Just ready. Ready to go.
Like, the photos I saw of her hair was beautiful. Her, like, makeup was always done. Like, she always wore heels. Like, she was just always done up. Like, a little old lady I would love to be and not the slob I am today.
Yeah, same.
She is buried in Dovecot Memorial Park. And honestly, Megan, from what I could not find anything to say that anyone was ever arrested for her murder. Like, at all. And, like, of all my sources that I'm about to tell you, I legitimately could not find anything. Like, it pretty much was like, oh, and she died, and she was robbed. Like, Jamaica, sorry.
Oh, that's so sad.
I mean, for her to be such, like, a prominent figure, you would assume. Yeah. I looked for podcasts. No one had ever covered this story. I read as many articles as I could. I looked on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, anything. I could not find any information, even from, like, these really notable articles about anyone ever being arrested for her murder.
That's really sad.
So, my sources for this story were a Distractify article by Abby Travis, a Caribbean Journal article by Sarah Grievous Gabadon, the Guardian article with no byline, Jamaican Observer by Jean Laurie Chin, also a New York Times article by the same person, another New York Times article by Mark Feynman, the Sun Sentinel by Glenn Roy Sinclair, and Wikipedia. So,
wow.
Just like I left that. I also had a childhood friend growing up named Jamaica Stewart. She died when we were 25 of breast cancer.
Oh.
So I would like to dedicate this episode to her.
Rest in peace, Jamaica Stewart.
She was pretty dope. We played softball together. So that's the story of Madame Rose Leon, which
had... I hate that story.
I know. I'm sorry. That's why I'm glad you told me to go first, because, like, what if we ended on that shit?
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
Megan, tell me a story, a creepy story that's gonna keep me up all night. Hi. Tell me a story, Megan. Okay. Make it good.
So, this week on The Bachelorette, we saw the last part, hopefully, of the Claire and Dale
it's
show.
It's not, because we didn't in the preview. Oh.
So, and Claire talked to...
No, keep the dubba dubba does in there, disrespectful ass.
I will. I will. It's called My True Colors.
You about to get slapped. If we were in together, I would slap the shit out of you. Bitch, hold on. A dubba dubba dub. Hold on. With the hand in my face, them fighting words. A dubba dubba dub, fighting words.
A dubba dubba dub. Supreme Court hasn't ruled on it yet. It's fine. That's a law joke for you nerds out there.
Ba-da-ba-bam.
Claire talked to Chris Harrison about how she followed all of the guys on social media. She checked up on them multiple times. Mm-hmm. And that's how my victim and her murderer met. Oh, man. Yeah. So this is the murder of Bianca Devins. Okay. So, content warning, I will briefly talk about self-harm and a suicide attempt. Very briefly. So, sources are Wikipedia, a Rolling Stone article by E.J. Dixon, Bianca Devins' obituary, a CNET article by a woman named Queenie Wong, The Cut article by Amanda Arnold, Spectrum Local News with no byline, Rome Sentinel article by Sean Mills, and a Vox.com article about e-girls and e-boys by Rebecca Jennings.
Interesting.
Yeah. So all of this happens in Utica, New York, which is in upstate New York. It's about an hour east of Syracuse. It's 240 miles northwest of New York City. Population is just over 62,000 as of the 2010 census. And during the 19th and 20th centuries, the city's infrastructure contributed to its success as a manufacturing center, and it became like a hub for the textile industry. But political corruption in the 20th century and organized crime gave the city the nickname Sin City, which I thought was only Vegas, I agree. I guess it's also Utica. Currently, there are more than 15 languages spoken in the city, which I thought was really fucking cool.
Why?
It just has become like a hub of immigration, honestly, especially for Eastern European immigrants. So I thought that was...
That's really interesting.
Yeah. Especially because it's in the middle of New York.
Right.
Yeah. So some notable people.
Notable
we
people.
Have... Fran Cosmo and Tommy DiCarlo.
Nope.
Okay, so they were in the music group Boston, and my mother loves the group Boston, so I had to throw it in there.
Okay.
Dick Clark.
Yes.
He started his TV career in Utica, New York.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Annette Funicello.
I'm going to say she's a harpist.
Oh, close. She was an early Mouseketeer.
Two things are not close, honey. But thank you for making me feel good.
You're welcome. And last but not least, Tiffany Pollard.
What do I know that name? Comedian?
You're thinking of Tiffany Haddish. Yeah. Tiffany Pollard is New York from Flavor of Love.
Oh, yes, girl! I'm so glad you included that. When I was living in North Dakota, Cornfed, who was from the show, because remember he gave all them nicknames,
uh-huh.
Cornfed was the white girl from Fargo, North Dakota. And, like, she was on the front page of the Fargo paper for being on that show. And, again, her name was Cornfed. So,
Like fed corn.
Yes, basically. They were like, he's like, I'm going to call you corn fed. And I was like, that was my claim to fame in college. I was like, you know, corn fed is from Fargo. Tiffany Pollard. What is her nickname again?
New York.
Like, literally, he was like, I'm going to call you New York.
I got nothing
New
else.
New York should have sued her.
The state that you're from.
Mm-hmm.
Sued him.
New York should have sued her for, like, keeping that name.
Oh,
and
true.
She's a hot mess, but she's a great gift.
And she's hilarious.
I loved I Love New York. That show was a hot mess. Her mom, remember her mom was off the chain?
Yeah. Yeah.
I also like Rock of Love, too. I loved all those shows. You didn't like Rock of Love?
I don't like Kid Rock. I think he's gross.
I don't think it was Kid Rock.
Was it?
No, Google it. I thought it was someone else. I wouldn't have watched a show with Kid Rock trying to find love. Ugh.
Bret Michaels.
Yeah, that's not Kid Rock.
You're right, that's Poison. Okay.
Girl, get it together. And you white. You should know this. It's like a part of your cultural history.
They all
history.
Look alike, hon.
You right. They damn sure do. Don't say all black people look alike, though. That's disrespectful. But those two people, I will say, definitely
favor
look alike. Each other.
So, Bianca, the victim in this case, Bianca Devins, you're going to hate the first thing I say.
Okay.
Because she had not yet seen her 18th birthday by the time she was murdered.
Damn it, Megan. What's that? Warning, child murderer.
She was born October 2nd, 2001. Baby. She was the daughter of Michael and Kimberly Williams Devins, and Bianca had just graduated from Proctor High School roughly a month before her murder.
I hate when people are murdered, like, on the cusp of, like, college, because, like,
yeah,
college is so life-changing until, like...
You have so much ahead of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She was an aspiring model, a talented artist. She enjoyed playing the ukulele. She also loved animals, especially her cats. And from her obituary, they talk about her passion that she wanted to pursue in a future career was to help adolescents struggling with mental illnesses.
My heart.
So she was pretty active on social media, including Instagram. She is referred to as an e-girl.
Yeah, you said that, e-girl and e-boy, and I was like, okay, gotta know what that is.
Yeah, I felt really old in looking this up because I don't know what that means. But it's a type of influencer in, like, the Gen Z world.
Hmm.
And the Vox article talks about, like, stereotypes of e-girls so that you can, like, kind of get a picture in your mind. So, an unnatural hair color, winged eyeliner, thrifted or upcycled clothes, lots of mesh t-shirts, and Sailor Moon stuff.
I think that's disrespectful because that sounds all dope as fuck.
It does.
Especially the winged eyeliner because them things are difficult to do. That's a skill.
They are. And I've recently become addicted to TikTok.
It's a problem.
It's a problem.
But I don't mind you sending me TikToks, only I go down that rabbit hole with you and then my husband has to pull me back out.
And then it's 2 a.m. and I'm still on TikTok. And it's been 8 hours.
But why does my body say, like, I'm tired as fuck? I get in the bed and literally I'm like TikTok. 3 hours of my day. Oh, maybe that's why it's called TikTok. Because you just waste a bunch of fucking time on it.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. They knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. So the Vox article also says it has a quote about e-girls and e-boys. So e-girls is different from e-boys, but, like, it's not necessarily stuck to a gender binary because it's Gen Z and they're, like, understanding as fuck when it comes to that. But for e-girls, they say, quote, there will be a little bit of skate culture, hip-hop, anime, cosplay, BDSM, and goth that will jump out if you can spot them. In short, e-girls and e-boys are what would happen if you shot a teenager through the internet and they came out on the other side.
Sounds like my people.
Yes. And I'm realizing through my TikTok obsession that I apparently follow a lot of e-girls and e-boys.
Hmm.
Yeah. So now I have to talk about Poopy Brandon Clark. Brandon Clark was 21 years old at the time that he committed this murder. He was born October 6th, 1997.
Okay.
He is from Bridgeport, New York, which is about an hour west of Utica, outside of, it's kind of like a suburb of Syracuse, I guess. And Wikipedia says that he grew up in an unstable household in which his father repeatedly abused his mom. And unfortunately, when he was 10 years old, he saw an incident where his father held his mother at knife point for several hours. And after that incident, Brandon was actually entered into foster care.
Jesus, yes, that's terrible. Yeah.
And I've heard how some podcasts do this when they talk about the offender. Like, you can feel bad for the child, the offender as a child, because they didn't have any control of their situation, and still think that they're a gross human being as an adult.
So good.
Which applies in this situation.
I can see that.
Yeah. Because Brandon's childhood does not sound easy. It does not sound like something any child should ever have to go through. And he made some bad decisions as an adult.
What I think a lot of, there are kids that have those same upbringings and very traumatic and traumatizing upbringings, and then they become mm-hmm. productive members of society and they don't fucking murder mm-hmm. people. So, like,
yeah,
you know, that is really sad. And there's lots of murderers that have had those upbringings but made better choices as adults. And he yeah. sounds like he's not going to make some great decisions.
He doesn't. Spoiler, he doesn't. So, Brandon was very much into Pokemon and Lolicon.
Never heard of that.
I hadn't either. So, Lolicon is a thing within anime and manga, like that world. It is female characters who are often younger female characters, and they're depicted in a more erotic manner.
Mm.
It's called erotic cute, and the name Lolicon comes from the idea of the Lolita complex.
Oh, I thought lollipops.
That's where I went too.
So just like young anime sexualized characters?
Yes. And so Lolita complex is defining a young girl as, quote, precociously seductive without connotations of victimization. And it comes from the novel Lolita, which was written by Vladimir Nabokov, which describes the narrator's sexual obsession and subsequent sexual abuse of a 12-year-old girl named Dolores, who was nicknamed Lolita. It's gross. Also, at the time that all of this happened, Brandon was an admin of a Facebook group for incels.
Oh, boy.
And I talk a lot about incels and inceldom in episode 27 when I talk about the 2014 Isla Vista shooting, and I will drop that in the show notes for show.
He did a really deep dive, and I learned, wait, I actually went on like an incel deep dive on Instagram, and the shit that I saw was terrifying.
Y'all don't do that. Don't do that. Mm-mm. Don't do that to yourselves. It's not. Mm-mm.
It's just very scary.
Just listen to the episode instead. Mm-hmm. It's terrifying and demoralizing. So, in short, incel is involuntary celibate. It's an internet subculture of men who believe that women, for some reason or another, will not sleep with them. Some factions of incels call for violence against women. It's found a lot on Reddit, 4chan, and those kinds of things. If you want more information, go to that episode, episode 27. I'll drop it in the show notes. And in the months prior to the murder, Brandon's internet history is full of sites about learning how to kill people and info on the carotid artery, which is never good to find out. Bianca and Brandon met April 2019 through Instagram. Like I said, she was an e-girl. She kind of had a small presence out there in social media. They started DMing. They started being friends. Brandon wanted more. He routinely called himself her boyfriend. From what I can tell, it's not clear if they were dating. They may have been seeing each other. They may have been just friends. But if they were dating, they were not exclusive. So, in July of 2019, on July 13th, they went to a concert. They meet up with another friend named Alex. They smoke some weed in the parking lot before the concert starts. Okay, cool. No big deal. At some point in the evening, Alex and Bianca kiss. And Brandon sees this. He gets real upset.
Did she know he was there?
Yeah. So Alex, Bianca and Brandon came to the concert together. Oh, you mean, did she know that he saw them kiss?
Wait, okay, sorry. Go back. Bianca and the internet guy, Brandon, they went to the concert together.
Mm-hmm. After they had met up a couple other times in person.
Okay, so I'm assuming she's like, we're just going as friends. And they smoke weed with the guy, Alex?
Yeah, that's the feeling I get, too.
Okay.
And at some point, they kiss. Brandon sees it. He gets real upset. Bianca falls asleep in the back of Brandon's car on the drive back home. It's around 10 o'clock. He actually wakes her up to talk about this kiss and to talk about how he's big mad. Bianca apologizes. She goes, you know what? We're not exclusive. Like, it was fucked, but like, you're not my boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
He gets upset. He pulls out a knife that was in his car. It was hidden in the car somewhere. I think it was under his seat. And they called it a long knife, which I don't like that either. And he starts slicing her neck by her carotid artery. And so Bianca bleeds out. She dies from these neck wounds. She's actually, some sources say that she's partially decapitated. Brandon leaves her in the car. He poses her body. He starts taking photos.
No!
He then posts these photos, and he's taking videos. He posts these photos to his Instagram stories and to Discord around 6:40 the next morning. Please don't go looking for the photos, listeners. And he posts them with the caption, quote, "Sorry, fuckers, you're going to have to find someone else to orbit." Apparently, orbit is a term used to describe men who lurk on women's social media accounts trying to have sex with them.
Mm.
So he then starts posting other stories and other videos of himself driving that same car that Bianca is in the photos. And he changed his Instagram bio to say the dates October 6, 1997 to July 14, 2019. Just know I feel no pain now. So that's his birthday and that day's date as his death date in his Instagram bio. So people start seeing these photos and videos on Instagram and Discord, and people start freaking out, understandably.
Mm-hmm.
He had apparently been talking to some of his other friends online during and after the concert. The friends knew that he was with Bianca at the concert, and the last message that anyone received from Brandon was about 5:45 a.m., about an hour before the photos went up. People were trying to figure out if it really was Bianca in the photos. People were trying to figure out if it was a joke or just or real, and just trying to figure out what's going on. They realize that it's real. Mm-hmm. They realize that it's real and that that is in fact Bianca. So they all start calling the cops in Utica around 7:20 a.m. because they've been like trying to figure it out in that less than an hour timeline. Utica police report that they receive several calls from people from Instagram, Discord, and from Brandon himself.
Mm.
And Brandon, in the phone calls, he's alluding to self-harm and alluding to a homicide. Some sources say he said to the officers, quote, "I killed my girlfriend." So the police get to where Brandon is, and Brandon takes out a knife, and he starts stabbing himself in the neck.
Megan!
Several sources say that as he's stabbing himself in the neck, he's continuing to take photos and videos and uploading them.
Of himself?
Of himself.
What the fuck? This is crazy.
He is taken to the hospital in critical condition because he stabbed himself in the neck. He did survive. And when he is taken to the hospital, he's found with more knives on him and rope. And this part, all of this story makes me so mad. But this part really makes me mad because sometimes the internet is a horrible place. So people
in their infinite wisdom, people took the photos and videos from Instagram and Discord, and they sent them to Bianca's friends and family.
What? Who does shit like that? People are fucking terrible. Literally, yeah. People are terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who would do that? Who would be so, like...
Oh, my gosh. So, Brandon was charged with second-degree murder. He originally pleads not guilty, which is pretty much par for the course. He's being held in custody, and he is found with a shiv made from a toothbrush. So because of that, he's then also charged with having contraband in the prison.
Right.
And realizing the situation he's in, he decides to take a plea, and he pleads guilty on February 10th, 2020.
Oh, that's recent.
He has not yet been sentenced because of COVID, because things keep getting postponed. On October 14th of 2020, he was taken back to court because he said he wanted to withdraw his guilty plea. He says that his attorney coerced him. He says his attorney only met with him a handful of times for about a half an hour each time they met. He says his attorney lost discovery, lost files, lost everything. Attorney denies those claims and talks about how he visited Brandon about 15 times before his guilty plea. Each time he visited, he was there for about 3 hours at a time.
Well, this is the thing, is like, now this attorney is going to have to take the stand, and he's going to have to say everything that he did and everything that they discussed, and there's no, you know, depending on what is brought up, their privilege is out the door, because it's like, well, what did you have to talk about, what you guys talked about? It really puts the attorney in good situations where they really don't do those things. It's like a good thing to be called on it, but I would say most of the attorneys that I know anyways who definitely treat their client like they just want to withdraw their plea and they're trying to find a way out.
Yeah. So the judge did not let him withdraw his guilty plea.
Good.
And he is set to be sentenced currently on November 10th, 2020.
That's like in a couple days.
Uh-huh. That's like Tuesday.
That's like tomorrow once this is released.
Mm-hmm.
She was very pretty.
Yes.
It's like a really cutie.
Oh my gosh, she's adorable. So Bianca's family set up a memorial scholarship fund in her honor for people pursuing a degree in psychology so that they can continue the dream that she wanted to do and help people with mental illnesses. And
the saddest part, yeah, though, is that she probably would have helped him. She would want to help him or for him to have, yeah, help, because he clearly was mentally ill. And yeah, instead he murdered her.
Yeah. On October 7th of 2020, the family has awarded the first recipient of the scholarship. She's a single mom who is working for a degree in art therapy, and that's what she wants to do, and that's how she wants to help people. And in September of 2020, Representative Anthony Brizzetti of Utica has introduced legislation designed to hold social media companies responsible when violent and graphic material is shared on their sites. It is called Bianca's Law, and the legislation would require social media platforms with more than $10 million in revenue and more than 100,000 monthly users to establish an office dedicated to identifying and removing violent content that violates that platform's moderation standards. The representative said that this office would have a public telephone number and a publicly identified supervisor, which sounds
reasonable, logical, necessary, yeah, and doable, especially for, yeah, those, that amount of users and the amount
that are making that amount of money. Yeah.
It's at $10 million annually, right?
$10 million in revenue and 100,000 monthly users.
Yeah, you can do that.
So that would include Instagram, that would include Snapchat, Facebook, all of those things.
As they probably should.
Probably 4chan too. Reddit.
That was terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so.
But good job.
Thank you.
So, up next for us is that we will be back to regular, I'm going to say not regular because really it's still Tuesdays of The Bachelor. So, we'll have our next, mm-hmm, recap that'll come out. And
regular for this season of The Bachelorette.
It's just been a very strange season, like on
and
the show.
And honey, I'm tired. It's 4 episodes and I'm tired.
But I'm excited to see Tayshia's journey. I have seen promos for her. I have seen regular photo shoots of her. I've seen the regular Bachelorette content when you do on Twitter.
That she deserves.
Absolutely. When you live tweet, we do live tweet on Tuesdays if you come and join us.
Join us. We're funny, we think.
I think so. The hashtag The Bachelorette now is Tayshia. It's not Claire anymore. So, like, literally everything that was Claire is now Tayshia. And so we're really excited to talk about that and say what's going on and just watch her journey unfold. It looks like it's going to be more, quote, regular of a Bachelorette season.
And some of these guys that we've seen do seem really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to see some more of their personalities.
Yeah. If we
get to know them a little bit better.
If we get some bios that come out for the new guys that are supposed to be added, then we'll definitely let you guys know that so you can kind of keep up with who they are as we do as well and go from there. Because
there's a lot of people and names are hard.
Because we haven't seen half of them. Like, they showed a photo and of Ed.
Most of them don't get name tags.
So who the fuck is that?
Bubble Man.
Bubble Man, that's right.
That's Bubble Man.
Oh, that's Ed. Mm-hmm. Okay, see? Right here, right now. You see how it happens.
Learning.
All right, y'all. Until next time.
Bye.
Peace.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Crime and Roses. Thanks for tuning in. Big shout out and thank you to our producer, audio engineer, tech support guru, and Danielle's bestie, David Velik. You can find him on Instagram at David Velik. That's DavidVelik. And at keylightmedia.com. KeylightMedia.com.
And you can also connect with us via social media. We're on Twitter at Crime and Roses, at CrimeAndRoses. We do live tweet during the Bachelor franchise shows. And if you use the hashtag Crime and Roses, we'll pick the tweet of the week and mention you on the show. You can also follow us on Instagram at Crime and Roses and send us your favorite memes and we'll repost them. Like, follow, and join the discussion on Facebook. And lastly, you can email us at crimeandroses@gmail.com. Send us your crime suggestions, also any questions and comments you may have. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on using your favorite podcatcher.
We love you. Bye.
Bye.